That was Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald, two who managed to begin with the big band era and continued on and stayed vibrant on through the end of their careers. Now I'm going to be taking you out with another person who's been able to survive the big band era and on up to today, with Gerald Wilson. And after 50 years as a big band leader, Gerald Wilson has garnered his share of accolades from, among them, the NEA American Jazz Masters Fellowship Awards, and also the two Grammy nominations and two Downbeat Awards, and the William Grant Steele Award, and then also the Paul Robeson Award, and two LA Jazz Society Awards. He has composed or arranged for Jimmy Lunceford, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, Dizzy Gillespie, Ella Fitzgerald, Carmen McRae, Nancy Wilson, Sarah Vaughan, Ray Charles, and the Los Angeles Philharmonic under Zubin Mertz. That name, I don't want to mess up someone's name. But that concludes our little, I guess you say, feature of Black American, African American band leaders and band people. Hope you enjoyed it, even though I kind of like skipped my language a little bit there. But this is Labeth, L-A-B-E-T-H, and stay tuned following the music from Gerald Wilson for Jay Cornick and the Journal.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Coming up next, our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Good afternoon. This is Friday, February the 22nd, and my name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be your host today for another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and views. And it's a very busy day on the Henry Ford Community College campus, had to push and shove a little to get in here because our annual Focus on Women Luncheon program is being held, in fact, just sort of concluding now as we speak, and that is a big event for a lot of the women in the community who are being especially honored, and that this year includes Alberta Muirhead, Dearborn resident, philanthropist, community activist, and well-known businesswoman. And she has received already today, I think, or maybe at this very moment, the Jean L. Brazell Community Role Model Award. So certainly a career and a life to be emulated. So congratulations to Alberta Muirhead. She's in good company. Last year, they gave the award to Governor Jennifer Granholm. So, wow. Although I believe the governor didn't make it to the luncheon. There was some little problem with the state of Michigan, like we ran out of money or something. Little, it seemed like a flimsy excuse to me, but that's what it was. Alberta, I trust, is here. I hope she's doing well. I haven't been able to schmooze too much out there, but I did see some friends, and our general manager, Susan McGraw, is attending, along with our news director, Susan Morrell. And so we have a lot of representation out there, and we're glad to serve the community and recognize talent, female or male, doesn't make any difference to us. But it is true in our society that not enough women get the attention that's deserved. And it's not just because they're the married wives, but because, well, it's still a male-dominated society. Yes, it is. And there's not total equity for opportunities for women. And we're getting there, I know. I think it's moving along decade by decade. And so it's still very, very important to have events like this and to bring that to everyone's attention about what wonderful contributions that so many women have made all along, but most men are not cognizant of that fact. So for all you men who are listening, just want to let you know, this goes on, and it's appropriate, and special honors to Alberta Muirhead, Dearborn resident and former businesswoman. You might remember, for those who have been around as long as I have, Muirhead's department store. Yeah, imagine a local department store in West Dearborn, locally owned, with true customer service and quality products, and they couldn't afford to stay in business. Isn't that something? But Alberta and her husband, of course, ran that operation, and then when he passed on, she continued for many years. And is still very involved in the community in many ways. See her a lot of philanthropic charity situations, charity and nonprofit organizational fundraising situations. And so congratulations to Alberta Muirhead. Okay, you are listening to WHFR.FM, you know, the station that's making waves. We do things a little bit differently here. We're a non-commercial educational licensee of the federal government. And our license holder is Henry Ford Community College, just so you know that. But, any opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, or anyone else necessarily who is here, including anyone at the Focus on Women Luncheon. However, well, we hope so. Okay, looking at the news, a lot of individual community stories here in the various papers. I probably should try to share with you the scoops, the things you can't get from local papers right now, but we'll get next week, because this is one of the advantages of listening to the radio, don't you know, is even before television, we can get the news on the air. And it just so happens that the city of Dearborn has been sending press releases either late Thursday or early Fridays. Now, of course, that gives the newspapers in town a lot of time to type up the stories and get it into print. And coincidentally, here we are at the radio station, and we get them, and we can put them on right away. So some of these next few things you won't see in the papers until next week. And let's see, coming in the door, this is very exciting. We have a co-host, I believe, joining me in a second. But I thought I would go over some of the State of the City address, and that happened this last Wednesday by, of course, Mayor John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr. in Dearborn. And I wasn't there for it. In fact, I hadn't remembered it was happening, or I would have told you last week that you could go and do that. Joined by Kristen Risbeck, who is often a co-host with me, and has been a DJ here at WHFR and a very supportive staff member on many, many projects. She helps produce the Mike Holloway Metaphysically Speaking program, we know. And also, I love having her on the show because she, too, yes, believes that community activism is a possibility. So let's do the mic check now. Good afternoon, Kristen.
Good afternoon, Jay.
Okay, I can almost hear you. Just keep talking, though. What's been happening in your life?
I was just going to say, I did not catch the state address or the city address either.
Oh, okay. No, I don't feel so bad then.
No.
All right.
Make you feel better there.
There we go. The good news is, of course, folks, if you have a WOW or Comcast cable in Dearborn, I've got a press release on that, too. But it's being repeated like every 2 hours. They're showing it again on every single channel for almost every day of the week. So just go channel surfing, and the odds are 1 hour or the other, you will find it either on the Community Access channel on WOW or, Community Access or CDTV channel on Comcast. So it's you can get to see John B. Jack O'Reilly Jr. doing this. But let me give you the brief summary, and for Kristen's benefit too, who hadn't heard
about
this.
Do they have that on the website
as
well?
Yes, yes. cityofdearborn.org.
I thought so.
Mm-hmm. Not dearborn.com. That's a porn site. So,
is it really?
Well, you know how people go and they license anything just to, once you get there, you say, maybe I didn't want to find out the state of the city. Maybe I wanted to watch these pictures here. No, I don't know that it is, but I know it happened once I don't know that for sure, but I know when I gave out accidentally, DearbornSymphony.com as a website. That's a porn site. Or it was, anyway, 2 years
ago.
They were not too appreciative that I didn't get that right. But, of course, most nonprofit entities, although it's not required, .org. But apparently Dearborn.org is already taken. And so they had to do cityofdearborn.org.
Yeah. It's well, .org.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
And,
okay.
Yeah. What a mind she has. Here's what the mayor was.
I just went there. Okay, go ahead.
Here's what the mayor was saying. First of all, he does at the outset acknowledge the kindness of the community after the passing of his father 2 weeks ago, John B. O'Reilly Sr. And we mentioned that we had the scoop on that too. I mentioned how this show can scoop the papers because it seems like all the press releases from the city come on Thursday afternoon or Friday morning. Actually, it's been kind of interesting. Every single week, they do press releases on Thursday night, and they do corrections on Friday morning because something was wrong or something changed. Now, of course, things do change. I've heard about that before, and it is true. So we get the benefit of both the press release and the update and the change and the corrections here. So he began with that, and he talked about how tried to make a metaphor at the beginning that things aren't quite as bad as they were back in the 80s, or even back in the Great Depression in the 1930s. So he's got his dad's memory then, or his dad helped him remember some of that. So things were worse, but we can't remember that because we're not that old, right, Kristen?
Right.
But, of course, there's a lot of people out of work, and there's a lot of mortgage foreclosures. Apparently, in terms of, it says 2% of all the houses are in foreclosure. Is that all the houses in Dearborn? That's about 20,000 residences. That would be still a lot of numbers, but it says foreclosures.
I don't know about that because the Press and Guide had something in a few weeks ago that said there was about 180 homes in foreclosure in the city of Dearborn. So
Well, if you take 20,000 times times 2, that would be 400, I guess, 2%.
Yeah.
So that's a little more. So, and he seems to think that that's not so bad. I know that Michigan right now has the highest number of foreclosures per capita or whatever of any state in the United States.
Yeah.
And what else is it? We have the highest unemployment rate, mm-hmm. and we're the most obese too.
Yeah.
So,
woo!
And I was trying to say last week. Some people revel in it, folks.
Our claim to fame.
Yeah. Hey, we're first in three different ways.
And I do believe that's also, I think we're third in the country in childhood obesity.
Yes. Yes, we don't want to forget about that.
Yeah,
for the sake of our future, we have backup here. We can maintain the title.
Oh, it's not funny.
It really isn't funny.
It's not joking, but it's not funny.
There is some, of course, negative consequences when people are out of work. They don't maybe have as much money. They eat to relieve some of their stress, maybe. Maybe they overeat. And then if they can't afford the healthy organic stuff, which does cost a little more, they eat the fast food or a lot of pasta or something.
Well,
and then
the cheap stuff is the fat stuff,
right.
Surprisingly.
Yes.
Which is not that way in a lot of countries.
Right.
We actually hosted some German exchange students, and we were actually discussing the American obesity factor. And they were talking about how in Germany, like a bag of chips is like $6. Whereas a bag of carrots is $1, like the American equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the healthier stuff over there is way more affordable than the higher fat things, which are considered treats.
Mm-hmm.
Over, you know,
kind of the way it should be. Although I understand over here is that not just are the somewhat limited, specially produced and difficult to distribute fresh organic foods would cost us more. I've heard that basically our food in America and the percent of money we spend on food is less than any other country in the world. So the healthy person who was giving this information said that we should be prepared to spend more money.
Yeah.
Because we would get better food or we could make better choices. But the healthier food, the fresher food, of course, rightly so, does cost a little more. Well, okay. So things aren't too bad in terms of foreclosures here. That's good. Mayor O'Reilly goes on to indicate that we're continuing with Operation Eyesore, which is to make your eyes more sore. No, to tear down substandard homes, actually even to demolish foreclosed homes, which I'm thinking, why can't they just resell them? I mean, if it's just foreclosed, they can't be in too bad a shape unless they've been sitting there for a long time.
Well, because here's the deal. If they knock them down and you build a new house, you have a whole different tax bracket. Then you have a luxury tax. The tax is almost double. If there's a new house in place of that old house.
Well, he goes on to make this statement, too. I hadn't heard about this, but he wants to work on various programs. He wants the neighborhood stabilization programs that he's put in place to give him tools to assemble larger residential lots. He says, I strongly believe for the long term we need to convert our smaller lots designed to house the new Ford workers in the 20s and 30s into the parcels people seek when they bypass Dearborn for the newer suburbs.
I agree with him on that.
Larger lots to accommodate newer, bigger homes will help us stay competitive as a community over the next quarter century and beyond. I know that in the neighborhood where I live, not being mentioned over the air, though, the bigger homes sell first. That the smaller properties, which are very nice, and I like my neighborhood a lot, they take forever to sell. Now, you would think that, you know, people starting out wouldn't need as much, and they might choose those. Although, unfortunately, in my neighborhood, even the smaller places cost more than a starter home, unfortunately,
right.
or average starter home.
Well, you're also looking at a generation, though, that grew up in a bigger home and bigger homes.
Yes,
we're just used to that.
And
people are used to more space, and when they go to these tiny homes, these little bungalows are just, what is this? Even though, technically, that should be a starter home, you know.
Right. And unless they're solar powered, they should look at how much utilities are going to cost them now and in the future, too, from the bigger house.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't think of that.
No, they will find out later, and then they'll get foreclosed.
Just like when you get that hot tub.
Oh, right.
You know, you have that hot tub out there, you don't realize it's going to cost you $300, $400 a month to maintain it.
I've got one, as a matter of fact, and I don't use it, but not for the cost. It takes too long to fill it up.
Do you have one of those solar heaters?
I need an instant hot tub, you know, on-demand hot tub.
Well, see, that's expensive, keeping it keeping it hot all the time.
Mine's a jacuzzi, so I always dump the water afterwards. So it's very wasteful.
Oh.
Okay. He mentioned here that we had a Sarkozy athletic field somewhere on the east side of Dearborn. The city bought it. So no more athletic field, folks. And they turned the lot into 15 60-foot-wide residential parcels. And they already resold the lots to near Fordson High School to a builder who by the end of 2010 is going to construct 15 new upscale homes there, one per lot. And he said that the city sold these lots on an average for $30,000 more than they paid for them, average each. It's going to take a while to get the homes built, I guess, mm-hmm. but there does seem to be that market. And again, Dearborn is a nice community in terms of crime and city services and that. We're still ranking very highly, as the mayor points out, of course, later on in his speech. And if it takes somewhat larger lots to do it, then if they get these foreclosures, it's a matter of trying to find a way to consolidate some of the lots somehow or consolidate the areas.
You know what would be nice, though, too, is if they implemented, and this was something that I actually wanted to formally propose to the mayor, but if they implemented something...
Well, this is the time. He could be listening.
No, if they implemented
this is
some
Kristen
kind of...
Risbeck, folks.
Okay. It's just an idea. Okay, anybody can go and run with this to the city if they want to. If they wanted to implement some kind of build-up Dearborn philosophy, whereas you take these bungalows that are currently existing, make low... interest loans for people to be able to add a second addition onto the top and turn their lower addition into, you know, more of the living space of what mm-hmm. people are looking for. It's very simple to do, and it's not that expensive if you get the right builders that come in and you can convert a lot of these bungalows into bigger homes just by adding a second story or an extension off the back.
Yes.
Which you have to do, you know, the city of ordinances, of course, have to sit there. All that. But I think it would be such an easy program to implement, you know, and people would be more maybe apt to stay, you know. People don't like to uproot their kids out of schools, districts.
In my neighborhood, once I moved in there in 84, we decided to put an addition on, and we doubled the floor space by adding to the first floor and the second floor. We went out back, and we did have to get pretty close to one property line, but they weren't, their house was like, the other house on the other lot was like 20 feet away, so it was like the backyard for them. So we were, I think we were about 3 or 4 feet from the property line, but the city allowed it because the other house was way far away.
Right.
You know, wasn't close at all, so that made that possible. That made our house one of the biggest in three neighborhoods, too, just because of the making use of the land we already had. These days, though, I was reading somewhere this morning, so many people, and this is one of the reasons for foreclosures, are finding, and they can't get out from under, the value of their house. I don't know if this is so much the case in Dearborn, but the value of the house has dropped below their mortgage.
It's very true here
so
in
that
Dearborn.
They can't. You know, they can't possibly sell it. Even if they sold it for market value right now, it wouldn't even pay off the mortgage that they have remaining, or much less, you know, I mean, it's just they recently took it out and they don't have much equity. They don't have much paid off. And so
I know several people who are in that predicament here in Dearborn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things turned around quickly. So maybe it's that community you want to stay in all your life because you can't afford to leave.
Yeah, you can't leave.
As long as you can afford the mortgage payment, though, that's the first issue. So the city, I don't know what the city should do, but the city is going to have to come up. You know, unfortunately, and this is only, it's not a negative thing, but I do not see any new programs that the mayor is talking about. He says we got to all work together. All the different groups have got to talk to the city, and the city's got to talk to them. Maybe there's some answers, but he doesn't have any answers now.
Of course not. They're too busy giving little warning notices about public service days all day long. Two weeks out of the month.
I've made comments about that for the last couple of shows and what I think of it, although he's proclaiming it as a wonderful success, that they can consolidate, in his speech here, too, that they can consolidate for every neighborhood intensive work for 2 days a month, which means they get 28 days off every month No. They're working in other neighborhoods in those days. But well, I've talked about problems with that in my mind. You live in the West Dearborn area, and last week I was talking to a couple of our staff members that are residents over there, very, very upset by the, as the mayor says, the dramatic removal of trees near Military and Outer Drive to make way for two of our federally mandated pollution control projects. So do you have any problem of traffic flow? You're not really close to
No, I'm
Military
right
and Outer Drive.
Yeah, actually,
a couple blocks over.
Yeah, I'm right over in that area. You know what? It's kind of one of those things. You got to do what you got to do. If it's federally mandated, you know, and they got to put it up there, they got to put it up there. I don't know. See, to me, that stuff you shouldn't really sweat about. I mean, I get more irritated with the little small useless things that they do. You know, I'd love to know how much money it's costing for 2 weeks out of the month to have somebody running around writing all these tickets, printing these tickets, doing, you know, when really nothing's being done.
No.
At this time. There, you know, there's nothing going on. You know, so it's kind of, when it's federally mandated and they have to do it, they have to do
okay.
it.
Well, I,
you know,
the mayor responds to this quite acutely here. I mean, some of the residents over there that I talk to that are part of our staff here and or that I see here at the station, very, very upset. What a mess it is. They're tearing up everything. It's very inconvenient, and it's going to go on for months. Of course, it is. One of the two projects is the combined sewer overflow, the CSO.
I was just going to bring that up.
And I've criticized that for years, and so have many mayoral candidates for the last 10 years, saying there's other ways to do it that wouldn't cost us $320 million, but the city,
I agree,
with it, all of its wisdom and all of its experts have concluded that all the other plans are not what they wanted to do. In any event, we're into this now. And here's what the mayor said about the Military Outer Drive project and the removal of all the trees. He said, first of all, that before a year ago, when before the first bulldozer was on site, that the city developed a plan with nationally known landscape architects and local environmentalists to fully restore and enhance these areas. Okay, but we did not effectively communicate this fact, says Mayor O'Reilly. He says, even my wife, Chris, asked me when I arrived home that evening, what the heck did you do with the trees on Outer Drive and Military? It's a quote from his speech, folks. So the mayor says, that was a clear sign to me that we need to improve our communication. And that's these residents are. Did you get a mailing or any information about this in your area? No, not a darn thing. They just started tearing things up. The mayor says, so I'm personally working with residents. Did he come to your door yet?
No.
No, but he's personally working with residents to refine our plan and take additional actions to provide immediate relief. Now, one of the relief things we mentioned, it was a scoop last week for us here on the show, is they're coming up with temporary parking permits for the workers, because it seems that the workers who are tearing up this area are parking their cars nearby on residential streets, and the residents don't have place to park their cars. Okay, and so they are directing now. They're directing the workers on the CSO project to park in certain lots, but they're not. And so I guess maybe they can send that ticket person over to ticket the people. What's the idea? They're going to ticket the people that don't have the stickers. It's sort of like the program that we used to have in my neighborhood, maybe they still have it, is that the residents of my neighborhood would all get certain letters to designate the neighborhood, little decals they put on their car. And then the police would know that even if the car was sort of weird or strange, anyway, they wouldn't hassle it because it belonged there.
Right.
And I don't like that kind of profiling because I don't know. Anybody can make a decal these days, I think. But I don't want to be better or more equal or more ticketable than anybody else.
But you should be able to park in front of your house.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's kind of your...
That whole plan about the temporary parking permits is detailed, and I'm sure that's one of the things they had to do as PR, that the number one complaint was, where am I going to park? You didn't tell me it's going to happen. I don't have even parking places in front of my house. People I don't know are parking in front of my house. And a good question, and they weren't informed. So that's in the papers, folks. The Times Herald and the News Herald have information about that from the city's press release last Thursday, and we mentioned it first. But you've gotten nothing in the mail, no postcards about that even?
Not that I've seen,
okay.
No.
Well, okay.
But I know you're busy. But I also don't, you know, thoroughly go through my junk. Like if it...
Your junk, yes, I know.
Mail.
If it looks like,
it's just
spam, who's got
if it's
the
just
time?
Junk
I know.
Mail, I just toss it. I don't have the time to read through all that. So.
Okay. He says, as dramatic as the initial action was, dramatic, which means crisis for the residents. We're confident that the planned restoration will provide a healthier and more beautiful natural buffer for those who live near and drive by these areas. So,
oh, sure, 50 years from now.
Yeah, good things are to come when those
little tiny
twigs.
Trees.
Yeah. When the twigs grow up, it'll be beautiful. So
they'll all be, everyone in that residential area over there, you know, yeah. Most of them have been there for so many years.
Yep. So welcome home, Dearborn. That's their marketing campaign to get people to move here. And we've got a lot of good things going for us, absolutely, positively, compared to some other areas nearby. No names mentioned, Detroit.
I'm just not going to go
yeah,
there.
Don't go there. And, of course, public schools, he says the public schools are the best-kept secrets of our community. Did you know that? Nobody knew that we had schools. I mean, the successes are the best-kept secrets. Here's what they are, and I wasn't aware of
but
all of them.
But why are we keeping it secret, then?
Well,
I mean, you want people to live here, that's one of the first things they look at.
Yeah, maybe I haven't read my newsletter from the Dearborn Public Schools, but apparently we have the highest credentialed early learning center. Now, I thought we had that, too, here at Henry Ford Community College. So, that's the one they share with us.
Oh, are you talking about the Henry Ford Early College Program?
Yeah.
Well, that's only in its second year, first year?
Then
second
they say year. They have a Montessori option for
There's
all residents.
There's a lot of holes in that program, by the way.
I looked into it. Oh, okay. And he also says, Mr. Mayor, I hope you are listening, taking notes, and a science, math, and technology program, that's SMT, targeted at the highest achieving students. To give them a competitive edge. So the lower and middle achieving students don't have a chance, I guess, huh? That's too bad.
That's an easy criticism, but that's... Right, let me make a comment on that, though, because
wrong.
I'm going through this right now with my oldest one who's going into high school. Because I looked at all these programs, the Henry Ford Early College Program, the DCMST, Dearborn Center for Math, Science, and Technology Program.
Okay, tell me.
All of the high schools, first of all, they have... advanced programming. They have advanced placement classes, you know, the AP classes and all mm-hmm. that. They do have all that. The Dearborn Center for Math, Science, and Technology Center kind of goes above and beyond those AP classes in science, math, and technology. Like, you're not going to get an AP English class, yeah.
AP stands for Advanced Placement.
Right.
Correct. Advanced Placement at a college, let's say, when they get to a college.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So they, anyway... It seems like it's a very good program. My oldest one, we actually applied for her to be in there. But it only takes 20 students from each school.
Oh.
So they keep it down to like about 70 kids or something to that effect. And then they go there in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, they go to their regular high school, which would be Edsel Ford, Dearborn High, or Fordson in the morning. And then they're bused over to there in the afternoon. And then juniors and seniors, it's the opposite. They go there in the morning, and they're bused back to their home school for the afternoon. So it is a good program. The Henry Ford Early College Program, though, I found that to be kind of a lot of holes in that. And first of all, because it's so limited with what medical fields that the kids can go into,
mm-hmm.
and how are you supposed to know when you're a freshman in high school if you are going to want to be a physical therapist assistant?
Yeah,
you know, there's not going back. Like,
right.
There's no going back. You're messed up in your school schedule.
Yeah, you're kind of on a vocational track.
Yeah,
you're
right.
In a certain technical direction.
Right.
He does mention, he said, we have innovative programs in nursing, dental, and culinary arts. Well, Henry Ford Community College is preeminent in our hospitality mm-hmm. education program here. Where are they getting, or is he referring to these programs in which they send them over to us?
There's an agreement between the college and the public school
right.
system.
Well, I mean,
where,
that makes
whereas
sense.
Some of the college, where some
yeah,
of the stuff,
I mean,
like the Michael Berry Center, is where mm-hmm. the Dearborn Center for Math, Science, and Technology is
mm-hmm.
located.
Right.
That's where that's located at. And then they basically, the college classes, once they start taking those, it's through Henry Ford Community College.
Right.
We
didn't get mentioned at all in that reference, but we are a public school, right? You know, controlled by the people of Dearborn, so.
Yeah.
I wish you would have mentioned our name here. But.
Yeah, it is very interesting. But what a lot of people don't realize, though, is that if you really want your kid to start taking college classes when they're in high school, they can here at Henry Ford Community College once they're 16.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these programs are spouting about how great it is because they can take college classes. Well, you can take college classes while you're still in high school here at Henry Ford Community College.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you do still have that option, even if you don't enroll in any of these programs that...
Yeah, about, you know, it was about 10 or 12 years ago, about two or three superintendents back in the Dearborn, in the city of Dearborn, had come into the job and said, you know, we don't need adult education. We don't need advanced placement in the Dearborn Public Schools. We already have it. It's called Henry Ford Community College. And he was exactly right, except for the transportation issues. We got to get the people over
right.
here for the classes. We have the facilities, the labs, the programs, whether it's vocational or just liberal arts, you know, advanced placement in, let's say, English. We got plenty of English classes, and we can get them in. When my daughter was going through the schools, even as a faculty member here, I had a terrible time getting her in classes here while she was also in high school because of the system they had to enroll you and so on. I think they've improved greatly, I hope, in the last 20 years in terms of that. But a lot of people don't know that. And it would seem to me, although, again, Dearborn Public Schools and Henry Ford Community College are two separate entities legally, even though the boards that control both of them, the Board of Ed for mm-hmm. K-12 and the HFCC board, are the same people.
Correct.
They're elected to two jobs of two separate entities, so their budgets aren't together. They're all separate, different sort of incorporation standards. So it's like two separate companies, but we have the same people on both boards. So, you first of all, they should be able to communicate well between the boards, right? Because they're the same people. Duh. So there should be relationships like the Child Activity Center at our college here that we are partners on now. And there should be many other ways because we're already here doing good stuff, well known for our quality programs, whether they're tech or more academically liberal arts oriented. And I think there should be a lot more ways to share that. But, you know, separate budgets, and I don't know, but the boards are the same. You'd think that they could talk to each other pretty well about this, but they put on different hats and they separate
right.
the jobs, I guess, at times, and,
well,
and there
the,
we are.
Well, one of the big things, though, about those two, you know, that being able to do the college classes or whatever within the other programs through the school is that the state actually allows the student allotment. The money, you know, that each student, you know how the schools have each student allotment. You have so much money. I think it's like $8,000 per student or something.
Yes,
like
that's
that,
the way
you know.
the state reimburses the schools. Right,
right? Yep. And that's how they reimburse a college is that they take that student's like if they're going to be here half the time and at public school half the time, then this college gets that half of the allotment up to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
So
nothing is really being lost, even though it's going into two different pots.
Yeah, it's just kind of you're right. It could be right. a lot more in sync with. With what's
okay.
already available. But well, anyway, moving on.
Kristen Risbeck is here with me. My name is Jay Koronik. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, February 22nd. And we'll be right back after these non-commercial but still very important messages.
The Michigan Humane Society is a private nonprofit organization serving the animals and people of Metro Detroit. They receive no government funding and assist more than 100,000 animals each year. They need your support. Visit them on the web at michiganhumane.org. You can make a difference by adopting, volunteering, or donating. That's MichiganHumane.org.
WebAdvisor is a secure internet program that allows HFCC students and faculty to safely access their college-related information. Through WebAdvisor, current students may register for classes, drop and add classes, pay for classes, retrieve grades, view and print schedules, get updates on financial aid info, check account balances. Log on to WebAdvisor at my.hfcc.edu or from the HFCC homepage at www.hfcc.edu.
Come on, baby, let the good time roll. It's WHFR Radio's 9th annual charity bowling event. Staff members from HFCC's own WHFR 89.3 FM will battle on the lanes for a wonderful cause. All takes place on Saturday, February 23rd, noon till 3 p.m. at Clover Lanes Bowling Center on Schoolcraft Road in Livonia. All proceeds benefit the Detroit-based Heartline organization, so stop in to pledge your support for non-commercial radio and make your donation to Heartline. For more information or to make your bowling reservations, call Susan McGraw at 313-845-9842. Need to do that by Tuesday, February 19th. Or check out more information on www.whfr.fm. Have a heart for charity and let the good times roll.
Well, yours truly is going to be out there at Clover Lanes tomorrow making a fool of himself as usual, but somebody has to, right? and that's from noon to 3. Yes, it's too late to sign up to help us with our cause, but we will have a little basket out there for Heartline, which does help a lot of especially women in the Detroit area who are going through very difficult times, whether it's abuse or a number of other problems, and they are a very worthy charity that doesn't get the attention of much of the other funding sources, but is extremely well known, and you know, sometimes the smaller organizations can actually have a bigger effect because they don't have as much fancy advertising, marketing, storefronts, big signs, and so on, or direct mail, which cost a fortune. It does raise some money, but Heartline is our cause this year, and this is the, I think it's the 8th year we've done this for a charity other than ourselves. And there's a lot out there to choose from, though.
A nonprofit helping a nonprofit.
Yeah, imagine.
You know,
yes.
Well, there's a concept, a very nice concept.
Well, we know
actually
that there's several other stations in Detroit, especially commercial stations, that Dick Purton, of course, everybody knows Dick Purton,
yeah.
And he, a couple times a year, or at least once a year, they have a phone-in, a telethon, a pledge drive for a charity of one sort or another. Maybe he's got the same one each year, I'm not sure. And that's great. But, of course, with the profits made by a commercial station, they could just write a check. I mean, it's not quite as sweet as having other people help you write the check.
Yeah.
But, you know, the average radio station in Detroit that's successful, and that's most of them are in big cities, have profit margins of 40% to 60%. I mean, that's the profits each year. That's net profit.
Wow, that's
40% to 60%. And 40%, oh, that was a bad year. They're desperately dying, you know. But
Well, we know they're not paying their DJs.
Well, that's right. Well, we don't either. Wait a minute, but
so that can't be a major expense.
We don't make any pretense of paying our volunteers, like Kristen Risbeck, because we couldn't afford her if we even if we had the money.
Yeah,
maybe we could. I don't know. you know, a lot of our DJs or a lot of our staff are actually so professionally qualified that if there wasn't the sort of consolidation and merging and sensationalism that has taken away a lot of jobs in the media, there would be a lot more really qualified and interesting people, I think, on the air, Dick Purton aside, of course. Let me go into a couple of other things from press releases. Got to do our scoops here before the show is over. Thanks.
Okay. There you go.
One of the items in the mayor's address this last Wednesday is that to help the community, there's now a Neighborhood Watch community phone line. Okay, residents can use this phone number coming up in a minute. Get your pencils. Can use it to report anything suspicious or even just unusual. Or I should say, get out your cell phones and start typing it in as a frequently called number. So if you see something happening in your neighborhood and you don't know what it is, okay, and it's not an emergency. If it's an emergency, dial 911, okay? That's clear here. Some people might think, well, this is the emergency number now. No. 911, that's still the emergency number. You see guns, fire, dead bodies, whatever, you know, you call 911. And maybe it's, if you don't know, is it an emergency or is it just something suspicious, why not just call 911, all right? Just, you know, because they won't mind too much. They get a lot of cry wolf calls probably anyway that they should investigate. Well, that number is, here you go, 313-943-3030. I said it that way because it's easy to remember. But 943-3030, 943-3030. 30. That's the new Dearborn Neighborhood Watch Line. So if there's anything suspicious or even just unusual, UFOs, whatever you got.
Kids
okay.
smashing pumpkins.
Ghosts. Yeah, even some minor irritation or something is probably okay. I don't know who's answering it. They don't say who's answering
probably,
the line.
It's probably it's a recorded
mail.
Message.
Yeah.
Press 1 for
well,
blah, blah, blah.
You know, it very well could be. Yeah.
Because God forbid we have real people on the end of a phone line.
Well, it doesn't happen much. It looks like the police may be in charge of it. The mayor says making the call is one of the best things you can do to help. Our police officers want that input. They will check out the situation and respond accordingly. If everything is legitimate, fine. But if some actual or potentially illegality is occurring, then the officers can deal with it. So it looks like it is going to the police, but it's not going to be probably as priority as a 911 line call.
Yeah.
So it might take an extra 5 or 10 minutes or so. The mayor did mention, and this is quite amazing, and boy, I'm glad to know this, and I think it's always been true, is that our fire response time in Dearborn, if you make a call, we need the fire department, the average time is 4 minutes to get to your house after you hang up the phone.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's... That means only half of your house is burned down in those. No, but 4 minutes, that is so good. It's almost unbelievable. It's like you grab your valuables or your loved one or your dog or something, and you're out the door, and then they're already there. They're already fighting. Maybe it's fire's already out even by the time you get out. You know, they'll probably let you know when they get there. But that's wonderful. And, of course, the mayor is proclaiming that your staffing is secure. Of course it is, because the city charter says it has to be, that they can't lay off any police or fire. And that's nice to know. The other scoop, I had a couple other scoops, but some of them weren't as good, is for the people in East Dearborn. You think West Dearborn is bad with all those trees coming up for the CSO project, no place to park.
Well, how,
oh,
about
my
the
God.
How about all the potholes?
Well, that's,
oh, my gosh.
Right, that's in the Sunday, last Sunday. Potholes bloom on Michigan Avenue.
Wow.
Now, that's not the fault of the city.
No.
What happens, folks, is, and it's, well, cars have been using the road. When the water comes down, or when it melts and turns into water from ice or snow, it gets into small little teeny cracks.
Right.
When it freezes, especially when it freezes really cold, water freezes, but it expands.
And it
basic
breaks
physics,
up the concrete.
High school physics, water expands. That's why if you ever want to, make a bottle of ice or something, before you put it in the freezer, don't fill it to the top. And then put the lid on,
right.
Because it's going to expand and crack the bottle or pop the top or something. And because water physically it expands in size when it freezes. Now, someone else can explain that to you, but that is the fact.
Well, and it breaks
that's
up the concrete.
Breaks up the concrete.
And then
right.
the car's riding over right. it, pops it up, and
this
it makes it all.
This sort of infrastructure problem is the nature of the highways we build in Michigan. I have talked to some engineers. I talk to engineers.
Oh,
yes,
oh,
I do.
Okay.
In Australia. Yes, okay, I'm
because
sorry.
Because they have the same problem.
That's the only place I find highway engineers. No. I don't get around much except to Australia. Highway engineers there said there's a way you can make roads for the cold climates. They cost twice as much, but they'll last 20 times as long. They will not crack. And guess what? They're made with recycled glass. Oh,
wow.
No, it's going to slash my tires. No, it's pulverized. And actually, I've seen this in some places in Australia where they put up the extra money. It costs twice as much to do it up front. Lasts 10 times or 20 times as long, depending on the weather. Even in Michigan, because it's so tight a surface that the water can't get in. And even heavy trucks in that won't break it up. Like they do with concrete, even like we have in Michigan. So we got into the wrong technology here in Michigan. If we're so interested in new tech, we're going to have to put some, again, money up front. But when we replace the roads here, we shouldn't use the same old technology like asphalt, which is the cheapest. Concrete, which goes longer, but it still breaks apart in Michigan weather.
Right.
If you pay twice as much, you go 10 or 20 times longer down the road. That would seem to make better sense, even if the city or the state's got to pay some bonds up front. But there are ways to do it. It's not. But here the fact is they can't adequately patch those holes until the weather gets warmer. Okay,
right.
So we're
going
to have to wait.
Yeah, but then they
springtime,
choose like lunchtime. and rush hour traffic to start filling those potholes. And it's just going.
Never a good time because Kristen's always on the road.
I don't mind them fixing them, except when it's, well, here in Dearborn, it's, you know, Michigan Avenue at lunchtime is very busy as it is. Well, and then you go and you throw a truck and some guys out there throwing down, you know, the black asphalt stuff.
I know there's such a thing as overtime, but couldn't you make a deal for them to work on the roads at night? You know,
it just seems like it would be.
And they could sleep during the day. Just use the third shift people. And, okay, there may be a premium to that. But couldn't you negotiate with unions to, you get your whole day off, but you just have to do your 8 hours at night. And that would, avoid the drive times. Now, obviously, some people work at night, but there wouldn't be as much. I mean, even if it's just one lane, those people get through really fast because there wouldn't be as much traffic. But we're not up to that point of those radical ideas. As Mayor O'Reilly said, though, he says, if we all work together in this, we all understand each other, you know, maybe we're willing to make those kinds of, if you will, sacrifices that, okay, instead of my day job fixing roads, I'll do it at night for the good of the community at the same pay, which I'm sure they get fairly good pay out there doing manual labor.
Yeah, but no one's going to do that.
Well, I'm just saying.
That's the thing.
Everybody's got to sacrifice
a little bit. You know, normally I'm a very optimistic kind of person, but, you know, when it comes to stuff like that, you know.
Well, here's the.
My pessimism comes out.
I understand. Here's the problem for East Dearborn. Greenfield Bridge over Michigan Avenue set for demolition and reconstruction. They already have some signs up, but nobody knows how bad it's going to be. So this is Michigan and Greenfield just east of the center. Okay. And there is an overpass there. Greenfield is the overpass, and Michigan Avenue going east and coming west is underneath. Dearborn residents are advised that beginning Monday, February 25th, 3 days from today, this coming Monday, stage one, oh my God, it's only stage one, of the Greenfield Bridge reconstruction project will start with the demolition of the bridge. The bridge is going to be blown to bits.
Okay, but
Get this next sentence in the press release. Traffic flow will be impacted in this area. They're going to blow up the bridge, which is over Michigan Avenue. I guess traffic, is that...
Does it really need to be blown up? I mean,
well, demolition.
Really,
they're taking it down.
No, but does it really need to be taken down?
I guess.
Or is this just a way for them to spend money so they don't lose money for next year or something?
Somebody said it was necessary, obviously, but we don't know if it's pork barrel or what. On Monday...
I haven't seen anything fallen.
Well, here's what's going to happen. Here's how traffic.
For something
when I heard
to
the
fall,
flow. When I heard that the flow will be impacted, I'm thinking about chunks of concrete smashing into cars. But they didn't. It's a bad choice of verbs there. People in the public information office. Traffic flow will be impacted by the demolition. Anyway, on Monday, English teacher I used to be, on Monday, February 25th, the east half of the bridge will be closed, and motorists will be able to use one northbound and two southbound lanes on the west half of the bridge. Traffic going eastbound and westbound under the bridge will be unaffected until March 1st. Now, on March 1st, so Michigan Avenue won't be hurt for the time being, so there won't be any impacts of chunks of anything falling on them, but I'm still scared about
glad
that.
Glad we clarified that.
On Saturday, March 1 and Sunday, March 2, though, contractors will demolish the east half of the bridge and allow the concrete and rubble to fall to the pavement below. So it will be impacting the pavement below. And
so that'll
kill
be the next project.
That'll kill the pavement below when the concrete falls on it. The following detour is in effect for March 1 to 2. Westbound traffic traveling under the bridge will be detoured up the westbound off-ramp across Greenfield and down the westbound ramp it's too confusing to figure that out, visualize
I'm already
that.
Already lost, sorry.
Over the radio, folks. Yeah. I'm sure the city will send you a map or something, but
I guess if you can avoid it, avoid it. But obviously, there will be residents around there that can't avoid that.
They are saying that after the weekend closure and detour, that's March 1 and 2, which is not this weekend, but next weekend. Okay, two lanes of traffic in each direction will be maintained. It's normally three, so that's not too bad though.
Yeah.
Except for the time that they're going to have the falling concrete. for the weekend from this. The second stage, that's only the first stage, the second stage will begin May 29th this year and is scheduled for completion on September 1st. They don't say what's happening there. Now, is there a third stage? Not yet. But the dates and schedules may be subject to change based upon weather, so check for current updates to the Greenfield Bridge at Michigan Avenue Project by visiting the City of Dearborn website at cityofdearborn.com. com. They got it wrong.
In their own press release, they got it wrong.
That's the porn site. Oh, my God. And that's the redone
it's
press
city
release.
cityofdearborn.org.
It's hilarious. Nobody can use it. What do you expect? It's just human beings writing this stuff. But
oh, right, right.
But so if you're looking for the closings, go to the porn site, folks. No, I don't know that it is. DearbornSymphony.com was porn, though, so a couple of years ago.
Okay, cityofdearborn.org.
Right. So we only have a Night Sky Report tonight, pre-recorded from our science reporter for WHFR, another volunteer, Carrie Zaitz, who is also featured in the Press and Guide every week. But we have her voice, her living voice, telling us about the night sky. And that will be about 3 minutes to the hour about, the clock just changed now. Now I got to subtract again, 5 minutes from now. So we did the potholes. Okay. The lead story this last Wednesday in both the Press and Guide and the Times Herald talks about the actions of several high-ranking members of the Dearborn Police Department. How high is high? Police Chief. But they've been called into question following a year-long investigation by the Michigan State Police Department and the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office. City officials say an investigation will determine what role, if any, the officers had in a February 15th, 2004... This is 2008, right? Incident at the Falls Sports Lounge that left at least one person injured. The bar is on Outer Drive near Pelham Road.
Interesting.
We're going to let the facts speak for themselves in this case, Mayor Jack O'Reilly said. But the facts, this is from Sean Delaney at the Press and Guide, that's the version I'm reading, or the lack thereof, or what led the mayor to ask for the investigation last year. Last year's 2007.
Why
That's
wait
3 years?
3 years?
Well, city officials found discrepancies between eyewitness accounts and police incident reports. For example, guess who it was, city officials? It was Doug Thomas. City Councilman Doug Thomas brought the matter to my attention, said Mayor O'Reilly, after he noticed the report appeared to be missing key information about the incident. And so the report fails to indicate that there were off-duty Dearborn officers present when the incident occurred. So we still don't have an answer to that, but now the Michigan State Police Department and the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office are looking into it. Ah, the wheels of justice are slow, but I just hope they keep turning. Yeah, as long as they keep turning. There is a very nice story here and a follow-up story about local wetlands. I know. It's easy to hug trees, but it's hard to hug a wetland. You know,
yeah.
Mud and water and okay. But a woman here is spotlighted, is profiled on the not in a police way on the front page of the Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, February 20th. Her name is Betty Welsh, and it is a wetland next to her senior citizen complex that is Oakwood Common. And it's a 10-acre wetland.
I know that.
They have a pathway through there. It's near my house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I thought it was just for the seniors in the complex, but I guess anybody could walk through there. And they have a problem in that it's not doing well, or somebody wants to pave it over or something. I didn't read the article. I was going to read it on the air. Sorry, folks. But it's interesting that on 13A, they point out that Betty has not only organized this group. Talk about, you know, citizen activism that makes a difference. Even show you the pictures here, Kristen. She can see the pictures, folks. Oakwood Common Wetlands Group, this is headed by Betty Welsh, is certified by an international group, the Wildlife Habitat Council, 20-year-old international organization that encourages businesses to be involved with environmental conservation, particularly on their own property.
Yeah. Duh.
It's your property. Why should you trash it? Be good for the environment. Oakwood Common is a 30-acre retirement community that includes all kinds of different living units and so on. And it also features a 10-acre wetland. So one-fourth of their property is this wetlands. And in order to take care of it, Betty seems to think that she needs to champion this, and she's gotten endorsement and support from the international organization. And there's all kinds of wonderful, unique wildlife there, and it's a great refuge. There's even comments in the story about a professor from the Professor of Environmental Studies at University of Michigan Dearborn, or U of M, it doesn't say Dearborn, Oren Gelderloos. And so it doesn't say U of MD here. So it's great. And just commend Betty Welsh for her work over there. And pretty good picture of her. I'm showing it to Kristen now.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Okay. it's cold there, so she's looks like she's freezing. But that's what it takes to be an activist sometimes.
It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. When it's amidst all this other stuff that's going on, it's a good thing. So.
Okay. Well, there is a good article. I can only about a minute to go here, folks, before our night sky report takes us off of terrestrial issues into celestial issues. Rose Bogart is got the guest editorial on the opinion page of the Dearborn Press and Guide Wednesday, February 20th, and she wants to explain why they're working. She is the chairperson of the Wayne County Taxpayers Association to try to recall Andy Dillon. He's the Democrat Redford Township who represents North Dearborn Heights. He was one of the people that did not cut taxes and, in fact, orchestrated an increase in taxes, as she sees it anyway. And she has a very good defense and argument, and maybe we can get her on the show in the near future to speak in detail about that and about her organization, which has been a great activist organization. Nobody wants to have to pay more taxes. Sometimes I do think it's necessary, but I probably generally agree with Rose. We pay too many taxes for too many unnecessary things.
Yeah.
It's just different people don't agree as to what's really necessary, I'm afraid.
When I see less waste in tax money, then I will vote for more taxes, you know, if it's really needed, but get rid of the waste first.
Well, Kristen, thanks so much for coming by this edition of New WHR Journal.
Always fun, Jay.
I hope you can find the time in your busy, busy activist schedule. And as a very active mother and wife and all that, all of our volunteers deserve all the credit for sharing what they know, not only on this show, but helping WHFR to get the word out to the community. So thanks so much for being in today for that. And here comes the end of the show. And this is now Carrie Zaitz and her Night Sky Report. So let's take our eyes off the mundane and get into the eternal for a few moments. This is WHFR Dearborn. Stay tuned for...
Hello, this is Carrie Zaitz with your Night Sky Report.
The Blues with Joanne Korchinska.
In the climate of economic struggles, sometimes it's hard to see the benefits of globalization. As Michiganders see jobs flying out the proverbial window to other countries, it's hard to welcome the change. But it may be argued that the sharing of resources may be the only way to continue human and robot space exploration, and therefore help ensure the survival of our species. Globalization is painful. Rich countries, superpowers even, may lose some of what they have to support countries that don't have as much. Can a country, can a people be that altruistic? I don't know if compassion is anywhere in Darwin's survival of the fittest. I don't know that the evolving the ability to share for a common good is necessarily going to help us survive as a species, much less get us to the moon or a nearby star. Maybe that's why we don't see aliens in Red Cross trucks patrolling our solar system. The ability to launch space vehicles is the first level of space exploration. The second level is sending probes to other worlds. The Soviet Union sent the first landed spacecraft explorer to Venus in 1970. Prior to that, both the U.S. and USSR had sent flybys to Mars and Venus, some successful, some not. In the 1990s, Japan sent a probe to the moon and then tried to send one to Mars. The first made it, the second didn't. India also wants to join the probe club with a program to go to the moon and Mars. They plan on launching an unmanned moon mission in April of 2008. Meanwhile, nearly two-thirds of the probes sent to Mars have failed. It turns out that sending probes to space is not the easiest thing to do. With a failure rate like that, it stands to reason that sending people to space is even more dangerous. So instead of secretly cold warring our space programs, maybe our nation should share our resources. But can that happen? Perhaps the space race is fueled by competition, not compassion. Level 3 of the Space Club, sending humans into orbit, has been reached by only 3 countries so far: China, Russia, and the United States. The Soviet Union beat everyone in 1990.